Welcome to the 19th episode of A Change is a Chance. My name is Ryan Lowe, and it is my goal to educate as many people as possible by interviewing experts on the most pressing issues in this world. Many of us are self-professed animal lovers. We love living creatures with cool features like fireflies, or adorable companions like dogs, cats, and bunnies, or some of the most majestic ones like lions and eagles. But does our love extend to animals that don't necessarily fall under those categories? Today, we are going to talk about sharks. Galeophobia, the fear of sharks, is present in more than half of all America. But due to trophy hunting, shark fin soup, and cultural healing myths, sharks have been hunted and murdered, bringing many species to the brink of extinction. With today's guest, that's exactly what we'll be delving into. Today, I'm proud to introduce researcher, marine biologist, shark advocate, Mr. David McGuire. Mr. McGuire is the founder of the nonprofit Shark Stewards, an organization dedicated to conserving sharks and protecting marine habitats. He has participated in many transoceanic sailing and scientific diving expeditions with scientists, filmmakers, and academy researchers expressing the natural world and ocean life and the need to protect them. Not only that, he has also spent 2 months on a biodiversity expedition in the Philippines, where he filmed and produced an Emmy Award-winning documentary, Reefs to Rainforests. Hello, Mr. McGuire. How are you today?
Great, Ryan. Nice to be with you.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. McGuire on an overnight stay at Safari West in Santa Rosa, where he gave an amazing presentation on sharks, why they're so important, and how we can conserve them. So with shark conservation in mind, let's get into our questions. I myself am not scared of sharks, and even got to see them from the other side of a cage once. However, many people are, as stated earlier. So why are sharks not as scary as they seem in the movies?
Well, as you said, Ryan, we have an unjustified fear of sharks, and in some cases it might be justified as a survival sense or instinct. But in most cases, it's actually unjustified and completely absurd, considering most people rarely will ever encounter a shark, even if you're like me, who actually tries to seek them out. Jaws, the film Jaws came out in 1975, and that film really had a major impact on the psyche, particularly of English speakers. And this, it's had a big spinoff in films or programs like Shark Week on Discovery Channel, other films, and then basically demonize sharks and show them as bloodthirsty, man-eating, woman-eating killers. And that myth has been perpetuated, and it's also perpetuated by the media. In news, they say, if it bleeds, it leads. So the news loves to carry gruesome stories of war right now with Ukraine, airplane crashes, car crashes, and of course, shark attacks. And you'd think that if you looked on the internet and you looked at the number of hits on social media that a shark attack happened every minute, when in reality, they're extremely rare. And in fact, fatalities are extremely low globally. So we do have this sort of unnatural fear of something that might kill us. But the reality is most sharks want nothing to do with humans. We believe that most bites are a mistaken identity for their prey. And the survival rate, even among white sharks off of our populations with humans, is very, very high, like 90% off our coastline. So the reality is really far out of proportion to what really the risk is.
Do you have any more interesting statistics about that?
Well, I think the statistics are the sharks should be more afraid of us than we are afraid of them, with around 100 million a year being killed for their fins or overfished as bycatch. Globally, the average is somewhere around 5 to 10 fatalities a year from shark attacks. And that's, almost 8 billion people. And then here in California, where we have hundreds of million person hours by surfers, swimmers, and other recreationists, the risk is infinitesimally low, like 1 in 170 million for the average beachgoer. So it's the risk of a car accident or a bicycle accident or even falling in the bathtub is thousands or even tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands times higher than being bitten by a shark. Even if you're an at-risk population, like I am as a surfer and someone who's in the water as much as I can be, in the area that we call the Red Triangle.
So you said 100,000 are killed every year with that?
100 million.
100 million are killed every year.
Yeah, sharks and rays. So it's really a staggering number. And really the bottom line is we don't have that many left. That was a study that was done by Boris Worm in a science publication in 2010. The year after was more like 93 million. It's probably lower, not because we're not trying to catch them, but just because there are fewer and fewer to catch. So around 355 species of sharks and rays are threatened with extinction. And that's almost a quarter. There are only around 1,200 species of what we consider the elasmobranchs, which includes the sharks, the rays, the skates, and the chimera, which make up the cartilaginous fish family.
And all these sharks are dying for what reason?
Well, in some cases, it's a bycatch or accidental catch. For example, tuna or swordfish, if it's a baited hook, the first thing it's going to be attracted to is a shark because of their amazing sensory toolkit. But also they're caught in nets. Sometimes they're targeted for food. But more often than not, in the past two decades, they've been targeted for their fins to make the delicacy shark fin soup, which is associated with honor, wealth, prestige. It dates back 1,000 years ago to the Emperor Song and the Song Dynasty. But now it's really in the past two decades, because of the large middle class following the communist era in China, it's now more of a capitalistic society. There's a lot more wealth, a lot more middle class, and a lot more people want this dish that's associated with prestige. So it's created essentially a gold rush in the ocean because of the sheer volume of people who desire it. It really is simple economics. It's supply and demand. The demand is so high, the supply of elasmobranchs or sharks and rays is relatively few, especially the large sharks, because they are apex predators. They are naturally lower in numbers. And so many large populations of sharks are crashing. Sharks like oceanic white tips, the wolves of the sea, may be reduced by as much as 99% since we started fishing commercially after World War II.
For poor animals like lions, elephants, rhinos, they also face trophy hunting. Is that a problem for sharks as well?
Trophy hunting is a problem with sharks, including here in the San Francisco Bay. The world record for seven gill sharks, which is a shark in the Hexancidae, it has seven gills. Other sharks in the family have six. Most have five. They're a very basal species, typically deeper water, but they use the San Francisco Bay as a breeding and pupping ground. Sharks actually give live birth. So these trophy hunters and world record holders come to the San Francisco Bay every fall to try to break a record, and they're killing pregnant female seven-gill sharks. White sharks were almost extirpated from our population, meaning local extinction, following Jaws. I remember as a marine biology student at UC Santa Barbara seeing white sharks hauled out on the dock. They were hunted as a vendetta. They were hunted for sport. They were also hunted commercially. And that population almost disappeared until they were protected in 1993. A lot of those sharks ended up in fish and chips or fish tacos. That population, of course, is protected, but we're actually seeing fishermen in California through our California Shark Watch program hunting white sharks for sport. It's illegal. They let them go. They actually say it's an accident. In some cases, you can tell on YouTube or Instagram that they're deliberately catching them, and they're maiming these sharks. They're hurting them, and at least 50% of sharks typically that get caught and are played recreationally are exhausted and end up dying. So it's not sustainable, and it's impractical, and it's actually cruel as well.
Well, all these terrible things are happening to sharks who've barely done anything back to us. So, Mr. McGuire, why are sharks so important, and what would happen to the ecosystems they live in if they disappeared?
Well, there's strong evidence that shows that when you remove apex predators from a terrestrial or an aquatic ecosystem, you have what's called an ecosystem collapse, which creates it's created by a trophic cascade. So sharks or wolves on the land are apex predators. If you remove them, they relieve the predatory regulation on the next trophic level. In the case of land, that would be deer in Yellowstone. In the case of the ocean, that would be large fish or marine mammals. They in turn eat the next level down, which would have their own regulatory threshold on the next level down below them. So you cause really like a domino effect that impacts all the way down to the base of the ecosystem, whether it be coral reefs, eelgrass beds, or kelp ecosystems. So if you want to protect an ecosystem, which we really do as humans, we want to have all the parts, because if you want to eat fish, or if you want to have a beautiful kelp bed to swim in, or if you want to have an ocean that's regulated from climate change, as well as the impacts from rising sea surface temperatures, ocean acidification, the easiest thing we can do is protect our apex predators, because that's one of the key linchpins in maintaining the balance and health of ocean ecosystems. So saving sharks can save much more than just a shark population. It can protect those trophic food levels below it, as well as maybe even mitigate against the impacts from climate change.
These sharks, who we kill about 100 million every year, are not only helping their ecosystems, but also our global climate change problem.
Yeah, there's really strong evidence in a study that was done in Sharks Bay in West Australia that shows how sharks actually move the grazers around, in this case, sea turtles and dugongs, which in turn eat the seagrass beds. Well, seagrass beds are one of the most effective sinks of blue carbon, far more than the rainforest. So if we can protect and restore seagrass beds, we're actually maintaining this carbon sink, as well as critical habitat for nursery, for larval fish, like salmon in the case of the San Francisco Bay, shrimp. It serves as a source for refuge, but also for commercial fisheries. For example, Dungeness crab love eelgrass beds. So if you can maintain the health and even grow these seagrass beds, you're going to have a carbon sink. You're going to have more of a source for larval fish for people who like to fish, but also the invertebrates that the rest of the system needs for their food, as well as sharks and rays really love seagrass beds. So the study that was in Australia shows that by having apex predators, it doesn't kill all those dugongs and sea turtles. It just moves them around so they don't act as clear cutters of the seagrass beds. So the seagrass beds are actually groomed and maintained by the tiger sharks in that case.
Wow, these sharks really are amazing.
Well, they've been around for almost 450 million years as a lineage. Sharks have survived 5 great extinction events, possibly even a 6th that actually impacted sharks about 20 million years ago. But right now, we are in the age of the Anthropocene. We're in the 6th largest extinction event since geologic time, since we've been recording things through the fossil record. And they're not doing as well as they did in the last one, in the large extinction event that caused the elimination of the dinosaurs and the emergence of the age of mammals. So sharks have survived all of these major impacts. And in that time, they've evolved, they've adapted, they've filled every niche in the ocean, from the deepest sea to the shallows, to the coral reefs, to even the boreal waters, where the Greenland shark lives in near freezing water, to pelagic ecosystems. So they've spread out, they serve roles, important roles, and yet they are disappearing because in many cases, we just don't care or just don't know.
It's terrible to see how we're just killing some of the most important creatures on the planet.
Well, a lot of it is ignorance. And, you know, we've worked here in California. We introduced the first shark fin ban in North America. There are 14 states that now have bills. There was a big bust in Texas where these poachers were trying to smuggle shark fins because of the high value. And now we have a bill in the U.S. Congress that has passed the House and the Senate. And once the language is reconciled, we hope it will go to the president for signature. The other thing we really need to do is educate our brothers and sisters across the ocean in China and make them realize that shark fin does not have prestige or coolness or honor, that it's really bad for the ocean. It's actually bad for your health because of the mercury in it. And it's just not an honorable dish to consume. So education is really important everywhere in all cultures across the world. And once we're educated, then we have the knowledge to go ahead with responsibility and act prudently and justly towards the health of sharks or other animals in the world.
So on the topic of education, what are some of the biggest myths about sharks that we need to dispel?
Well, some cultures believe that eating sharks give you power. Sharks aren't associated with as an aphrodisiac like rhino horn or some of the other traditional medicines, but they, in some cases, they believe to have, like in the Chinese culture, eating the soup, it gives you prestige. It's like showing off in a way. There are a lot of myths about sharks. Many ancient cultures, particularly indigenous peoples, believe that sharks, in some cases, like Native Hawaiians, their ancestors reside in the form of sharks, and they rever sharks and they protect sharks. So Hawaii is one of the few places where sharks are protected from not only commercial fishing, but recreational fishing. And we're seeing a benefit. I've been living in Hawaii, actually, and we're seeing a benefit to the local economy through dive tourism, because divers will pay more money to see sharks than just about anything else. So keeping sharks alive is valuable not only to the economy, but also the ecology. So there's a lot we can do to educate people, but I think divers more than just about anybody else understand and want to interact with sharks. So we're seeing across the globe, from Palau in the South Pacific, that was the first international shark sanctuary, to Malaysia, where we work creating marine protected areas, Indonesia, the Philippines, here in California, in Mexico with great white sharks, South Africa. Across the globe, it's a $1 billion industry supported by dive tourism. So sharks can bring in as much as $2 million per shark to the local economy, whereas if you kill a shark for its fins, it's worth $100 and then it's gone forever.
So places like Hawaii and Palau are doing the best with shark conservation. What about on the opposite side of that? What countries are the biggest contributors to shark extinction, and have these countries done anything to cut back on the issue?
In the Pacific, Taiwan and China are the biggest fishing nations. There's been very little done in either country. The biggest thing that was in favor of sharks is when President Xi Jinping came into office, he actually established these austerity measures. And there were a number of things that people in the government and the Communist Party could not partake in or could not do. And on that list was shark fin soup, because it's so expensive. It can be $100 a bowl. So he made this decree that banned many things, including shark fin soup, which actually gave maybe an unintended help to shark conservation. Taiwan is terrible. They're big shark killers. They'll kill whale sharks, which are endangered and on the international protected list. And then on these fishermen don't just fish in the China Sea. I mean, they're fishing internationally, including off the Galapagos National Marine Protected Area and a World Sanctuary, World Heritage Site. These large industrial fishing nations are going out and killing not only sharks, but shark food, all the way down to the base of the food chain. So it's incumbent upon us to help apply pressures both internationally through trade, but also quotas, as well as not purchasing these products such as tuna that might come from Taiwan or from China, or some of the fish that come from other areas, like, for example, Chile, which has a really great network of marine protected areas, also has a really large longline industry, and they're actually killing dolphins to catch sharks for their fins. So there's a lot of heinous acts that are occurring in all oceans, the Indian Ocean, the Atlantic in particular. Spain is the largest fishing nation in the Atlantic, and they'll block any kind of proposed protection, for example, mako sharks, because mako sharks are also caught in tuna fisheries accidentally, but also caught for their fins. So I think part of the solution, besides working at the United Nations level, which we do, and working in these large global, what are called regional fisheries management organizations, which are established by the United Nations, that set quotas for tuna, end up killing more sharks. What we need to do is apply pressure on them in the international realm. But as consumers, we can also issue products like shark fin soup, like yellowfin tuna or bluefin tuna, which indirectly can create more of an economic barrier to some of these what are called illegal, unregulated, or unreported fisheries globally.
Yeah, everyone has the power to do something. And as a Taiwanese American, I wonder about your perspective on balancing culture with conservation. So would you say, is it hard to balance cultural tradition and conservations?
Well, I think you could tell me that better than I could, because I'm not Taiwanese American. But we worked in San Francisco, and the first thing that we did is created something called the Asian Ocean Harmony Alliance that was made up of Chinese Americans, Asian Pacific Islanders, people like from Taiwan, from China, who were living in California. And they were the face, they were the culture, not me, who is an outsider. We provide the science, and they provide the passion and also the cultural argument. So I think that it is important for people like you, who can reach people from Taiwan or Chinese Americans, that shark fin soup is not important to you and why. And they're more likely to listen to you than they probably will a wailo like me. And also, you know, you're a young person. Young people have a big voice, and people are more inclined to listen to a good argument from a passionate young person than they will from somebody who's either scientific or from another culture.
I'll make sure to use that power for good. So let's talk a little bit about shark stewards. What led to the founding of the organization, and how has your work impacted the oceans?
Well, it's funny, I'm actually live casting this from the Life Science Building at UC Berkeley, where I worked for 10 years. And I was on an expedition in the South Pacific, and that's when I discovered shark finning. I witnessed it. I saw sharks without their fins that were still alive. So the sharks had been caught, their fins had been cut off, and the animals had been thrown over the side to drown or bleed to death and suffer. I also dove with hundreds of sharks on healthy reefs, and we also studied reefs that did not have sharks and were able to determine that without those sharks, you had that trophic cascade that created algification or algal growth over the coral. So reefs that had sharks were healthier, they had more biomass, they had more biological diversity, and were overall more healthy than sharks, reefs that did not have sharks. We sailed into the main port of Papeete and documented a Taiwanese flag vessel catching tuna, buying it from the local fishermen. And the whole rail of the ship was lined with shark fins. So we went aboard. I actually ended up taking a sabbatical, coming back with cameras. We made a film called Shark Stewards of the Reef, which was my first documentary to introduce the California shark fin ban, but also protect what's called the Papahanao Makuakea, North Hawaiian Marine National Monument, which is the largest marine protected area in the Pacific, protecting many species of sharks, but all species in the ecosystem. So we used the film to advocate, but I ended up quitting my day job here at Cal founding Shark Stewards to advocate for shark conservation. That was in 2003, so almost 20 years And it's funny to be back here working a little bit and working with students back on campus.
Well, what do you think is the most important thing that needs to happen in the near future for Shark Tank?
Well, the ocean faces so many threats, which also means there's so many solutions. There's so much that we can do as individuals, no matter where we live. The ocean connects us all. It provides us our oxygen. Over half of the oxygen that we breathe comes from the oceans. So killing the ocean is killing ourselves. It's taking our breath away by killing the plankton. Plastics are a huge impact in the ocean, whether you live in Colorado, you live in the highest mountains, it all flows down to the sea and it poisons the food chain. So there's so many risks that are manifest. Overfishing is a huge one, of course. Shark fin soup is one of the most egregious examples. But there are many risks, but there are also many solutions. So supporting marine protected areas like we have off of California, our mission is not only to save sharks, but it's to protect critical ocean habitat. We've been able to protect 16% of our state waters in this scientifically studied, managed, and monitored network of marine protected areas. We also have 4 national marine sanctuaries, and we have a 5th one that's proposed that people can go online at Shark Stewards. They can give public comment to protect not only the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary off the Big Sur coastline, but also a new national marine sanctuary in Hawaii in the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument that will provide more money for scientific study, but also fighting ghost nets and marine debris that will help protect marine mammals like whales, like endangered monk seals, sea turtles, and other species. So supporting marine protected areas is something that anybody can do in the United States as voters or as citizens. Asking where your seafood comes from. It's generally not good to eat apex predators, that include swordfish and tuna. Where's your food come from? You know, how is it caught? Whether it was farmed, whether it was grown. You know, we all have the opportunities, mostly as Americans, because we're a fairly wealthy nation and fairly affluent, so we can ask questions about where our food comes from. And that in turn applies pressure on either the manufacturer, the person who's transporting that food, or the person or company who's producing it. So there's a lot we can do. We can't give up. We have to work more than ever. It's urgent because we are losing our large predators. There are more Siberian tigers in the world than there are great white sharks. It's easier to protect animals on the land because you can watch them, you can count them. In many cases, you can breed them at captivity. In most cases, you cannot breed large megafauna, marine megafauna, in captivity, and you probably wouldn't even want to put them in there. So you can't really keep great white sharks or whales or other large megafauna in captivity and breed them. So they're more imperiled, they're more out of sight, so it's more incumbent upon us to better understand them as scientists, better understand them as people, but maybe just better love them as humans so that we can all coexist together. Because we've been evolving together for millions and millions of years, and it's sad to ruin that interrelationship because someday that is going to come back and bite us. Those ghost sharks, those dead sharks are probably going to come back and bite the health of humanity unless we start taking care of these vanishing species.
It's just terrible how the amount of sharks around are declining, and not unlike other land animals, we can't make it go back up. Can we?
Well, in some cases we have. White sharks off of California and the West Coast, including Mexico, have recovered since the time of Jaws, and complete protection both in Mexico and the United States. And unfortunately, these sharks migrate 2,500 miles offshore every year, the large adults do, where they are at risk to these long lines that are set out for tuna. They're also at risk. We've seen great white shark fins in the shark fin market in Hong Kong. But we can protect them when they're in our national waters and they are recovering. So the white shark population that was almost completely decimated, I mean, extirpated, almost gone, is now recovering. We're seeing more. They are rebounding. And they're also generating this huge tourism industry among divers. So if we can protect a large enough area, like the Papahanaumoku Kuakea of Hawaii, tiger sharks there are actually doing quite well. Tiger sharks are vanishing in other areas around the world because of overfishing, because of loss of habitat, and because of shark fin soup. So protecting large amounts of our ocean is going to protect not only the sharks, but as I said earlier, perhaps mitigate against climate change. The goal is to protect 30% of our oceans by 2030. That's the United Nations goal. That's been endorsed by our president, by our governor. We have a long way to go. Around 7% of our oceans are protected internationally. Around 15% of our land masses are. In the U.S., we're doing much better, but we have a long way to go, particularly in the open ocean among these migratory pathways where there is really indiscriminate fishing.
I know that you know a lot about sharks and conservation. So how can the listeners learn more about shark stewards and shark conservation?
You can go to our website, sharkstewards.org. We have science sheets. We have a community science program called Shark Watch where people can download the QR code and they can learn more, but also add observations anywhere in the world that go into a scientific database. We also have a volunteer dive program where we're going into our California marine protected areas and logging data that goes into the California Academy of Sciences iNaturalist database, which in turn is given to our fisheries manager at Fish and Wildlife in California. And you can sign petitions to tell the United Nations, to tell President Biden, to tell our governor to support marine protected areas, to support protecting sharks from overfishing.
Well, I'll probably go check that out right after this. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. McGuire. I am excited to continue following Shark Stewards' campaigns and efforts. I'm really grateful that I met you by chance last month and ended up learning so much about shark conservation. I know that I want to do everything I can to help make sure they are thriving so my kids in the future can see how majestic and beautiful these creatures are too.
Great, Ryan. It's great to be on your show, and it's also inspirational to see someone like yourself advocating for sharks and ocean health, because the future is in your hand, the ocean's voice, and the shark's future is actually relies on passionate youth, particularly speaking across the ocean you speak English, but I mean in Chinese. We are working with young Chinese in China trying to advocate for ocean health, and the more people understand how important not only sharks but other fish that we're eating or even killing without even knowing, the more that know, the more that we'll be able to act. So thank you for your work, as we need young leaders like yourself.
Well, I will keep using that passion that I have to make sure these creatures get the well-deserved protection they need.
Okay, thank you. So, see you on the ocean.
That's it for episode 19 of A Change is a Chance. I hope you learned something, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.